The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
But Stevie Wonder talking about or singing about his daughter when she was born. She was 1 minute old. Isn't she lovely? This is Janelle, and I'm in the studio with Rich. This is Thought Crime Radio. We are voices for the human rights of babies.
Perfect human beings.
And you're listening to us on 89.5 FM, KOPN Columbia. We are Mid-Missouri's source for in-depth news, diverse talk, and music of the world. It's more than radio. It's community radio, and we're on the web at kopn.org. And we have listeners in Holt Summit, Tebbets, Versailles, Centertown, and we cover the world. And you are listening on to information that you won't hear anyplace else. Right?
Damn right. We're covering the fundamentals here. We're starting from square one because that's where we all start, square one. And it is very counterproductive to start out life in the wrong way, to ignore millions of years of evolution. It just doesn't make scientific sense. It doesn't make emotional sense. It doesn't make any kind of sense to just throw away millions of years of evolution and try to second guess nature's process for birth.
That's why we decided today that we are going to be lobbyists for nature.
That's right. We are unpaid, and we're hoping nature will. We've placed a call to nature, and hoping that we will get bountiful benefits from our activity. But we aren't holding our breath.
But you know, the bounty is if we can make a change,
yeah.
And if we can support other people to look at the information that we've begun to look at and be just absolutely startled and outraged by what happens to the human baby from sometimes conception forward, but certainly in the birthing of babies and what happens.
Yeah, people assume that education starts with kindergarten or something. It doesn't make any sense. Babies imprint just like all other mammals. They imprint. That means that the very first experiences are the most crucial in establishing patterns of meaning in the brain. And all we're doing is paying obvious, you know, the most fundamental tribute to common sense is all we're doing. We're just talking about common sense here.
Common sense, and we're considered radical.
Apparently.
Because we're starting at the very beginning. We started, our show is fairly new. We started talking about circumcision, and we're in like week five or six. And that's one of the big atrocities. And once you get what happens to the baby when they're circumcised and how it impacts them and how it impacts society, then we're going to start looking at the experience of the baby at birth. And we have I'm very excited today to have the guests that we have today. We're bringing on guests from all over the world, and it's very exciting. And we have Lynn Reed, who is someone that I met while I was on the road shooting my film. And she is a woman of the Jewish faith, and she is going to share with her story of coming into this new awareness of circumcision and how she, I guess, for lack of words, confronted that, you know, in her religious society, and where that is now 20 years later, which is really important information for people to know, especially people of the Jewish faith. And so she's also, we're going to move from that into talking about this language that we use, the cutting edge. Everything's cutting edge, and where does this language come from, and what's it about? We're going to talk about circumcision as a cutting. We're going to talk about the perineum being cut. Women are being cut. We're going to talk about the cord clamping, that cut, and certainly the cesarean cut, where women are cut open and the baby's pulled out. All of this.
And the isolation, the psychological cutoff.
And all of that leads to the psychological and the
sensory deprivation
because,
right.
And so we're going to talk about that, how all of these things actually cut us off from our mother in the very first moments of life. And you like to talk about empathy and the intimacy. So I think we're going to have an exciting time when we bring her on, which is going to be momentarily. But we have some little news items. Like, I wanted to introduce this. There's a lawsuit. A baby died during circumcision sometime recently, and the parents are involved in a lawsuit. And that's, you know, bringing up a lot of discussion because, well, the parents are responsible. They chose it. Why are they now suing for the death of their baby just because it went wrong? So,
well, Well, the parents actually made two mistakes. One was to get the baby circumcised. The other was to give the baby blood-thinning painkillers afterwards. And apparently that facilitated the hemorrhage of the wound, and the baby died of blood loss. But
and I think that probably Lynn will address that with us, too, because in the Jewish faith, they don't circumcise in those first days and hours after life. I think it's at least seven. And that's one of the reasons they give babies vitamin K at birth rather than waiting until the baby's system is ready. So, and you had some news too, I think.
Well, I did want to mention that, you know, we're talking about a whole constellation of needless and destructive interventions that go on with babies in this country.
I'm trying to get him to talk louder into the mic.
On the thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com website, there on the right side, there's a link called Munchausen Obstetrics, which I am
the proud author of.
Well, I there's like 12 or 13 different categories here of traumatic and destructive things that happen to babies in typical obstetrical procedures in this country, and circumcision is probably the most outrageous, but it's certainly not the only thing. The first mistake they make in the obstetrical wards is to have the woman birthing on her back. And here is a quote from a former past president of the International Federation of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. He states that, quote, "Except for being hanged by the feet, the supine position is the worst conceivable position for labor and delivery." Supine meaning laying on your back. So a woman who is free to move around and assume the positions and postures that she needs to normally, naturally, you know, instinctively, through the genetic programming of her body, these are the motions and the positions which facilitate the passage of the baby through the birth canal. And
if when a woman's on her back, it closes her pelvis in 30 to 50%. So if she's upright, the structure of a woman's body and gravity will work together so that she could have almost twice as much space to birth a baby.
And this birthing position really is probably the single biggest mistake that they make in terms of hindering and obstructing natural, well, just delivery, period. And it leads to all kinds of interventions like forceps and vacuum extraction and all. It's just unbelievable what they will apply to a baby to get it out of the birth canal.
Well, I'd actually like to say that before that, I think the biggest mistake they're making is the induction, because it's the baby's birth and the baby is the one who signals to the mother that I'm ready to be born, and then there's a hormonal chain reaction, and when they induce, her body's not ready, the baby's not ready, and so they go into all these interventions
and then they obstruct it. I mean, it's like creating a situation for an explosion of some kind.
And I think I'm gonna have to get Lynn on here, because she's probably just like to start talking to us, because I did forget to mention that she is also Trust Birth Augusta. I think it's Trust Birth Experience Augusta, and she is part of Trust Birth, which is an organization started by Carla Hartley out in LA, and Lynn's going to tell us about that as well. So we have a lot to talk about, and I need to keep us on focus, and I hope I didn't just lose her. Hey, Lynn, are you there?
I'm here.
Yay! I'm so happy.
Excited.
So happy to have you on. So,
Thank you. This is a great way to start out the new year.
Yes.
Talking about human rights and respect and dignity of our tiniest of human creatures here.
Absolutely.
Human people.
How much intuition does it take to recognize that a newborn baby has human rights, you know? Apparently a whole lot.
It's taken an awful lot.
Yes.
I mean, Michelle Adant, you know, has really pioneered a lot of work in that direction, and I really thank him for opening my mind and opening my heart to listen to my heart, so that I would be able to do the work that I've done so far.
And it's so pivotal. It's the most. It's a time of imprinting, and it can mold a person's life in ways that, you know, that are just. it's a very pivotal time of life.
It's the baby's birth. It's the baby who's going to have to live with how the parents and caregivers chose to bring that baby into this world.
Yeah, I agree with y'all. I'm sitting over here going, yeah.
So, and I'm sure listeners want to hear more from you than us. So tell us about your work and Trust Birth and the work that you and Carla are doing to start us out.
Well, sure. Carla Hartley started the Trust Birth Initiative, and there's a conference I think every year she has out in Redondo Beach, California. Then next one's coming up in 2010. March 12th through the 14th, and there will be, there already have the complete schedule online of the sponsors and also the speakers. And of course they're, you know, as we say, leading edge people, not cutting edge. I mean, these are people from all over the world that are coming to talk about symposium type conference. And I went last year with my daughter, who's in nursing school at the time, and we went because we felt like it was time to, you know, bring that same sort of energy to the East Coast. Because, you know, we're seeing such high rates of C-sections. In Brazil, it's hitting 90%. And wow. I think that's the canary in the mine for us. You know, we can see now already Miami County has hit 50%. C-section rate, the whole county is 50%. And I know in Augusta, Georgia, our hospital here, it's 40%. So, this has become just, you know, an epidemic, and it's obscene as far as I'm concerned. And yet, you know, somewhere along the line, we all decided that it's okay to cut everything. And my heart says, you know, my first birth, I'll sort of let you know where I'm coming from.
Sure.
I had what they call a vaginal C-section with my first birth, which sounds harsh, but it was incredibly harsh and it was incredibly traumatic. And, you know, I knew something was terribly wrong, but I couldn't figure it out. And thank God, you know, I breastfed my first child, and we healed from a lot of that trauma through breastfeeding. The bond that was basically ruined, you know, at the beginning, we were able to reestablish, and I was able to work through enough of the trauma so that when I had my next baby, I went to a midwife and, you know, knew that, you know, I didn't want to have an episiotomy and have all the, you know, interventions that I had with the first birth. So that took a lot of work to get to that point. And I really kind of wish now I had enough together to stay home and have my baby, because still there were things that happened, you know, at the birth center with a certified nurse midwife that, you know, probably would not have happened at home. And, you know, I regret that, but that was as good as I could do, considering the, you know, the traumatic birth we had had with the first baby. So I also knew that there was no way that if I had a little boy that I wanted him circumcised. And that brought up, you know, another whole huge, you know, issue. But, you know, I was working so diligently to bring my next baby into the world without all that trauma. And so I started searching rabbis locally and asked, you know, what we could do, because I really didn't want to circumcise my son if I was going to have a little boy. And I really felt like I was going to have a boy. So, you know, I was already feeling very protective of him. And the rabbi that I first spoke with couldn't even really understand what I was saying. He was thinking I was saying, should I, you know, hire a moil, which is a person who does a more of a religious ceremony type of ceremony. And they do that all the time. You know, that's all they do, these moils. They go around and do just circumcisions. They don't do any other type of operation. So they're considered, you know, the most efficient, proficient, quick, you know, less invasive, less pain, all those kinds of things. But as far as I was concerned, you know, that's not what I wanted to discuss. What I wanted to discuss was how we could get away from not circumcising at all. And, of course, he explained to me that, you know, that there would be no way that he wouldn't even be considered Jewish if he wasn't circumcised. I said, well, I'm Jewish, and he's being born from between, you know, I'm birthing him, and so it's a matriarchal religion, and, you know, if the baby comes out of the mother, you know he's Jewish, if the mother's Jewish, and they didn't even want to have the discussion with me. So this was back in 1981, and really there was no one talking about it, and there was no internet, so I was just sort of following my heart, and I then talked to another rabbi, and they said, well, you don't have to circumcise him, but again, he will have to be circumcised as an adult. And, you know, he wants to be Jewish or he wants to marry someone Jewish. So my husband and I discussed it, and I sort of likened it to having, like, papers for a pedigree-type dog. You know, if they didn't have their tails docked, then they wouldn't be considered pedigree poodles or whatever. And my husband could kind of fly with that. You know, he was, it was hard for him. You know, his mother, that's all she asked this entire time I was pregnant. Are you going to have him circumcised? Because, you know, I don't think so. So we contacted Mothering Magazine, and I sent a letter to the readers, and they printed it. And I got back a lot of feedback considering, you know, how long ago it was. And we even received a ceremony that was in Hebrew and English from a rabbi in California. And it was not the Bris Shalom ceremony. It was called New Bris ceremony, which we decided then to just do ourselves, which did not involve any cutting, of course, because we wouldn't, you know, do that ourselves. But as it turns out, we on the eighth day, our son was still just coming home from intensive care. He had problems after his birth, and I think it was from being made to push him out too soon. My midwife was in a hurry. And anyway, when we came home from the hospital, there was no way I was going to put him through any more hoorah than he'd already been through. So that pretty much sealed the deal. And we decided we would just do the ceremony ourselves, which was absolutely beautiful. And I shared it with quite a few people back in, you know, the early 80s. But then, you know, I just sort of lost. I got busy raising my kids, and I homeschooled my children, and I just figured, you know, the world would evolve. And I was really surprised to find out, you know, many years later, I met Marilyn Milos actually at the Trust Birth Conference a couple years ago, and she was telling me that there are a lot of more people, a lot of Jews who are now not circumcising. They're just having the bris ceremony without the melah. The melah means to actually cut the foreskin. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing some more research, which made me understand that, you know, even back when Abraham and God were having their conversation and they're making their covenant and, you know, all those things that, you know, were told to us is the reason that, you know, we need to continue this, you know, barbaric, as far as I'm concerned, ritual, that, you know, Abraham, there's no way that he could have done the radical type circumcision that we know today. He more than likely did something that would be considered a blood ritual. You know, a long time ago, blood was considered very magical. And so, you know, it was even, it was a very pagan thing, actually, blood rituals and mixing milk and blood and, you know, that was sort of that whole thing where I think, you know, God was sort of pulling the Jewish people away from that sort of pagan sort of blood and milk sort of rituals. And yet there was a covenant, I guess, established between God and Abraham to do that. And I feel very certain in my heart that it was just a very small cutting of the foreskin, which, you know, I imagine Abraham could do by himself, to himself, you know, under a lot of you know, being very motivated. I guess someone could do that. But I didn't see any sense in, I mean, I felt very confident that the Jewish people have such an abundance of life-enhancing, sort of life-affirming, mind-opening traditions that, you know, our identity, our sense of cultural self, he would survive without circumcision, you know, because it, you know, it always has sort of grown. I mean, Judaism has always been able to sort of, what's the word I want, evolve or change with the times, you know, and, you know, why is that one thing, why does that have to be the one thing that defines us as, you know, Jews? So,
good question.
Yeah, when I really looked into it even further later after we made this decision, I felt, you know, I was really, really felt very good that we had made this decision, even though, you know, it was more of a heartfelt decision at first. It was more of like, there's no way I'm going to do this to my baby. But now that I look back at it, I think, you know, my son feels very Jewish, and he, you know, there's many other things you can do to raise a Jewish child than to circumcise them, you know? So I think if people go out of their way to do those things, you know. So anyway, we have this new bris ceremony that I want to call it like free bris, like free birth, you know, where people...
Free what?
And free, you know, the free birth movement, which is like an assisted birth and... not having to have a quote-unquote professional to deliver our babies or to circumcise our babies or to educate our babies. I mean, we've all of a sudden decided that we have to have all these professional people do all these things, and I don't believe we do. I think that we can be empowered to, first of all, you know, birth our children. I mean, if we have a strong sense of birthing our children, we can pretty much do anything, and we can learn to listen to our hearts. And I think as a young Jewish mother, you know, I learned that, you know, having an empowering birth, that I was able to, those strong feelings, I was very clear and empowered after that birth, and I was able to refuse, you know, potential attacks upon myself and my baby from then on, you know. And before that, I was like pretty much like everyone else, you know. I was just open to anything that anyone wanted to do to me, because that's what we're told to do, you know. We're sort of said, you know, you go to your appointment at 6 weeks and you do this and you do that. And you know, I think at some point I just said, no, I want to question everything that's happening to me.
Isn't that what happens when you start questioning birth, is that you start to question everything?
Everything.
And then you become lobbyists for the natural world?
And it's pretty much across the board. I mean, it's like you let a cat out of the bag. You know, it's Pandora's box. And I'm certain that if people would go ahead and just, you know, open that box up, you know, that there's nothing scary in there. You know, it's yourself, it's your empowerment, it's your life force, you know, that it's so strong and good. And yet we're made to feel like it's something frightening, and if we do anything against the status quo or the norm, you know, that we'll become, I don't know, you know, heathens, or I don't know what they think. But
when did we lose faith in our own design?
Yeah. You know,
how is that possible?
We're perfect.
Exactly.
But we are
God's creation.
Nothing is wrong. You know, I love that mantra. You know, there's nothing wrong, you know. It's like right this moment.
Everything's,
I mean,
right. Hey, could we go back to you describing that, the ritual that you were going to talk about?
Free bris.
The free bris?
The free bris?
Yes.
Well, I can read the ceremony that we used. It's not very long. It's absolutely beautiful, and it'll pretty much explain everything I'm talking about, if you
Great.
Want me to.
Absolutely.
Okay, starts out, says, we find ourselves in a new time, in an age where new laws governing the relationship of mankind to you, I guess that's Hashem, God, and to nature are at work. We thank you, our Lord, for bestowing on us the understanding of these relationships and for allowing us the growth that has brought us this understanding and brought us to your, in your presence. In this closeness to you, we have gained complete trust in your word and the faith in the perfection of your works. We have shown you have shown us wonders, and we are ready to accept your works in their utter perfection. This child created in your image is whole, complete, and perfect. He is a child of God, a child of the new, a child of light. We accept him as he has come to us, and do not defile your creation by changing it. He enters into your covenant in a shroud of understanding. A new day has dawned. And at that point, instead of cutting his foreskin off, we lit a candle. It said, even as he has been introduced into your covenant, so may he be introduced into light, love, and happiness. Praise be God who has bestowed honor upon us by sending this child to bless our home and family. We in turn honor this child by bestowing on him the name, and we gave him his Hebrew name, Ephraim, which means tree of life. May he live a life full of happiness and wisdom. May he be blessed to live the whole of his life in the light of your presence. May the Lord bless and keep him. May the Lord look upon him kindly and be gracious unto him, and may the Lord bestow upon favor upon him and give him peace. And then that was that.
That's
and,
beautiful.
Amen.
You know, I mean, really, when you can do that, we don't even have to try to find, you know, special rabbis who have evolved and understand that things have changed. And I think that's part of the problem. Everybody is scurrying around trying to find someone that will do this ceremony for them, and they can't find anyone, so they just fall back on the norm. And they say, oh, well, it's just a little foreskin, and we have to do this breath. And, you know, they're forced to do something they really, in their hearts, don't want to do.
Unless they've had a home birth.
And
yeah.
Because they know that they can have other options than to fall back on, oh, well,
yeah,
this is what's available.
Some people still feel very obligated to still have this naming ceremony. It's very, very important. I mean, there's a huge party involved. I mean, it's very entrenched in ritual and in Judaism. And I don't know, you know, I mean, you would hope people would say at that point, but I think a lot of people are talked into it because, you know, it's just such a part of the norm at this point. But, I mean, there are people who are starting to say, well, no, I want to do something different. And sometimes, you know, they'll just fall off and decide not to even be Jewish anymore, you know, which I think is sort of a shame because that's, again, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, you know. I mean, you don't have to throw everything out the window. You can still be very Jewish, but... Hmm.
You know, the foreskin grows in an adult. The foreskin has a surface area of about the size of a car, you know. A
postcard.
A postcard. And,
yeah.
It's full of tens of thousands of erogenous nerve endings. And who would want to sever...
It's like it's cutting off the ends of your fingertips.
Well, it's
even worse.
Yeah.
It's
supposed
yeah.
to be the most neurons per space of any part of the body.
I mean,
and it's an internal
organ. Imagine it, you know.
It's a window into the heart and the soul.
And yeah, and I need to do a little break here and let people know that we're talking to Lynn Reed from Augusta, Georgia, who is a Jewish mother, talking about her coming to a new awareness about circumcision and not circumcising her son. And we're going to be moving into talking about the cutting that's happening in our society to the women. You and I talked one time, Lynn, about how in your experience when you were talking to different people regarding your son, that part of the conversation was, is this is, there's no naming ceremony for the girl and all of that, but here in our society we won't circumcise girls, but we have this cutting going on.
Well, so, we have a naming ceremony for girls too, but again, it doesn't involve, you know, of course, circumcision.
Well, we need to take a little break here, and
okay.
When we come back to you, we want to move into talking about the leading edge in
yes.
natural birthing and what's happening to women and all the cutting that's going on. And so we need to let local people know that there's an NAACP holding a regular meeting on Tuesday, September 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at the historic Second Baptist Church, 407 East Broadway in Columbia, and all are welcome.
And on Saturday, September 26th, the Missouri Department of Natural Resources presents Let's Have Some Fun with Fungi, a program about mushrooms in Bend, Missouri. The program will be held at Rockbridge State Park from 10 a.m. to noon. Learn about identifying edible and hopefully non-edible mushrooms from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. After lunch on your own, go on an outdoor hike to discover and identify mushrooms in the park. All about mushrooms on September 26th at Rockbridge State Park. Free, but reservations required. Call 573-449-7400.
Cool. So we're going back to Lynn then to start talking about this leading edge. I'm really fascinated.
So let's
I'm just reading something by Jenny Goodman. He's talking about the little snip, you know. It doesn't hurt and doesn't leave trace in the memory as the child or the mother. And
did you say Amy Goodman?
This is a woman. Her name's Jenny Goodman.
Oh, Jenny Goodman.
That's Jewish. Okay. And the letter that she wrote, I really could have written myself had I been that articulate. You know, she really speaks with the same heart, I think, that I the beats in my body. And then she's talking about this little snip that we, you know, that happens, that we assume doesn't cause any scars in the soul of the mother or the child. And that, you know, we really believe that this cultural identity, you know, this sense of belonging will crumble if we stop cutting pieces of our baby's bodies off, you know.
But why not the earlobes? Why not the fingertips?
Right, exactly.
What is it about the genitals that that make
I don't know what it is about cutting in general. You know, I mean, that's where,
yeah.
You know, I'm starting to really, Janelle and I have discussed this many times, but, you know, where do we decide? I mean, I know obstetricians are trained surgeons, and I feel very certain that they just, you know, they become trained surgeons because they like to cut things. So, you know, why not cut perineums and umbilical cords and...
That's a scary thought.
All these things, you know, when you think about it, you know, there is that whole sort of thing of, I need to cut something. You know, just to stay still and let me cut something open because,
yeah.
You know, I like to cut things. And...
So
I read this one obstetrician said that it was the closest thing when he did a C-section, it was the closest thing he could experience to having a baby himself. And when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, this is something that maybe these people really want to have babies. Maybe they want to have that feeling of birth because it's a very powerful feeling to birth. And maybe these are men who really have that sort of sense in their soul that they want to experience that. I don't know. I mean, this is something, you know, it's profound, I understand, and probably as radical as your radio station.
But it's warped. I mean, frankly, it's just warped because they're not women and they aren't having babies. And
no, and it's just convoluted, and you're right. You know, it's we need to get back to the fact that, you know, women birth babies, and women need to know that they can birth babies.
Safely.
You know, we've learned not to trust that process. We've learned to turn that over to someone else. And the people we're turning it over to, I think, like that power.
Yes.
So we need to look at that.
So there's circumcision, there's umbilical cord cutting, there's...
The episiotomies. It's probably the worst thing that if you were standing around watching things being cut,
yeah.
And you watched someone cut an episiotomy, that would probably be the one thing that would make you weak to your knees.
Yes, there's video.
It's awful.
There's videos on YouTube showing episiotomies,
yeah,
and it's really,
really, really horrendous. And I don't think women understand how awful it is. And, you know, for years and years, I really didn't know what had happened to me. I just knew it was very traumatic. But until I actually saw it, it was like, oh, my, that's happened to me. I mean, that was horrible. You know, that was really, really...
Yeah, they make you numb from the waist down, and so you don't really experience, even if you have a vaginal birth, you don't experience.
Yeah, but your soul experiences it, honestly. I mean, I was so flipped out by it afterwards, and I didn't understand what happened to me. And it took 20-something years for me to unravel that and understand it. And it's like, my goodness, I mean, that's huge, and that's a very, very delicate area of your body. And then 6 weeks later, I had to go back and have my obstetrician cauterize the scar because it was still not, you know, healed. It was all the way to, you know, from stem to stern, as we call it.
This really is a form of female genital mutilation, especially when you consider that episiotomies are the primary risk factor for severe tearing, which is precisely the thing that it's supposed to prevent.
Exactly. I would much rather have torn, honestly. I mean, the body has, you know, a natural ability to heal back into the center. We have a center in our body that goes from, you know, our nose, our lip, everything kind of grows to the middle. And again, right there, you know, in the vaginal areas, or the yoni area, that's a center line in our body, and our body just naturally grows cells toward the center. So if there is a tear, which is a lot easier for the body to heal on its own than a really straight cut like that, it's actually very difficult to approximate to repair.
Yes,
a very straight line. If you take a piece of paper and tear it versus cut it, it's a lot easier to match up the sides, the pieces together, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
So, you know, a midwife will say many times, you know, I've heard them say it's a much easier to repair a tear than it is a straight cut that there's nothing to align it to, you know. It's like,
yeah,
one side's the same as the other, you know. But anyway, that's another whole issue. I mean, you've got to, you know, we're not using... If women are upright and birthing their babies, they are not going to need forceps, and they won't need C-sections, and they don't need all these things. And, you know, the baby comes out, and there's no need to separate them from their baby. So there's, no need to cut the cord. I mean, there's dyad between the mother and the baby, and there's no need to do anything. There's no need other than for the mother to fall in love with her baby and, hold her baby and then nurse her baby. And then the cord, you know, the placenta births on its own. And there's no, you know, bleeding. There's no problems, you know. The baby gets all the good cord blood, and that's the way nature has, you know, designed that. And I also am very ambiguous about the whole cord clamping and putting that little, they put a little plastic toggle on the cord so that they can jerk on it, you know?
Hmm.
And the cord itself is very slippery. There's no way to pull on a cord if you don't put that little, it looks like a lawnmower starter cord toggle thing that they clamp on there when they clamp the baby's umbilical cord.
So they don't wait for the placenta to deliver normally, is what you're saying?
Most of the time,
no,
not, because they need to get the mom out of there and get the next woman in there and birth her baby. So
this is crazy, because if you clamp the cord while the placenta is still in the uterus, you have a difference in pressure.
But you're in a hospital, and if there's any emergency, they can save your life. Remember that?
But he's got a good point.
Not the problem.
The timing, if you don't wait until the placenta is delivered, then the timing becomes a critical issue, because the difference in pressure on the placenta and the baby outside the uterus forces more blood into the baby than would normally be the case. After the placenta is delivered, then some of that blood can flow back to the placenta, and you have equilibrium again. But
we're able to overlook all that natural physiological stuff and we can do all these artificial things in the hospital.
But they get it wrong.
Because
they get it wrong
all
the time.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying that's how they look at it.
You're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, they don't appreciate the fact that the natural process is maybe takes a few minutes longer.
Well,
but
and I want to add
much healthier.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
I know, it, I get
the,
all
no, the disadvantage is we can't see each other. We can't see each other like going, I want to talk. No, I just wanted to add that a midwife that I interviewed in the L.A. area is one of those renegade midwives like we like to, like in Trust Birth. And she told me that for the past 15 years, she has not clamped a cord. So what she does is about 3 or 4 inches from the umbilical cord, she clamps it, the cord, but then she cuts it, and she doesn't clamp the baby side, and she says that like an animal will chew on it, if the family members just sort of hold it and manipulate it, that it starts to actually have a back drainage. And she says that, you know, if they're at home, of course they're not going to get it's the fluids coming out at that point, so they're not going to get germs in it, and plus they're in their own home, so they have immunity to the germs in their home. But she says that in the 15 years that she's done this, that she has not had one case of jaundice, which is really important. And she practices midwifery based on the old book Tecology that was written by a female doctor in the late 1800s.
Yeah, the timing of the clamping of the cord makes a difference. But I mean, if you don't wait for the placenta to be delivered, then the timing of the clamping of the cord makes the difference between jaundice and anemia, which are both disasters.
And this is significant information that the medical profession doesn't seem to have, is that there
well,
is...
Well, actually, they do. And the physiological clamping of the if the baby is born prematurely, all doctors know to leave the cord intact and to hang the placenta up like a... what's it called, an IV, and let the cord blood go into the premature baby, because they know that baby needs every possible chance it can get.
But
a full-term baby, they'll be fine, you know? They don't need all that extra blood.
even premature babies, oftentimes, because they want to whisk them off to the emergency care unit, so they cut the cord immediately, you know?
Put the blood back in when they get in the NICU.
If they're having a hard time, they will actually use that, the draining of the blood into the little baby, because they know it helps them. But, you know, again, it takes extra time. But,
You know what I promote is that, because we haven't studied, we don't know actually the full capacity of the placenta, just like, you know, not too very long ago, women were told that their breast milk was not as good as formula. And so now we know all this amazing research. Every day there's new information about the value to the baby to have breast milk, and the placenta is, and you heard it here first, folks, that in the next decade we will be looking at the placenta the same way that we've been looking at breastfeeding and wondering what in the heck were we thinking about, because we don't know the full function of the placenta and how and when it should be clamped. It's all determined by that professional's preference.
We also know that premature clamping is directly tied to early onset autism, and that supplying iron supplements to a prematurely clamped baby does not help. For some reason, the iron is not metabolized in the same way as the baby's blood would have been if it had received a full transfusion from the placenta.
Well, so I'm going to... We have about 5 minutes left with Lynn, so I'm going to stop. I kind of got on my soapbox there. Let Lynn continue talking about the leading edge work and how these interventions cut us off from our mother in a primal time.
Yes, I definitely want to speak to that. I have an example of something that happened when my daughter was 3. She changed from the Mommy and Me library class. I know this sounds off topic, but... then all of a sudden when she turned 3, she had to go off and to be with just the children class. And the librarian, who never had any children, but she was a children's librarian, told me that my daughter needed to learn to be cut off from me. She she needed to learn to be with the just 3-year-olds. And my daughter, of course, cried and didn't want me to leave her. And, of course, I didn't. But I realized at the point, I thought, why in this society, why are we in such a hurry to cut our children off from their source, from their mother, from their heart, from their... I mean, it almost is like it's an ongoing thing that we do. And I know in communist Russia, there was a whole thing when they would take a baby and separate it from the mother for 5 days. And it made the baby easier... It made it easier for the mother and child to then later on be manipulated and separated.
They still do that there.
This is all about social control.
Yes. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that, you know, I'm starting to really sort of back off and look at and see a bigger picture. And, you know, I'm telling people, you know, it's maybe more insidious than we realize. You know, I know that a lot of greed is involved, and, of course, you know, all these things make the delivery go faster and more managed and makes more money for obstetricians and blah, blah, blah. But I'm wondering if there's something even greater, you know, that is happening. And, you know, if our children are artistic or they're, you know, not as intelligent and they don't reach their full potential, how much easily are they controlled?
Exactly.
And that's the part that I'm starting to see, and I'm 59 years old now. You know, I'm coming into my eldership time, my cringeship time, or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I'm starting to vision and see that, and I'm starting to say to these young mothers and the people of the earth, you know, it's like, take back your birth.
Take back your power.
And, you know, don't let people take it away from you. They're robbing us, and there's a reason. And if we take it back, then they won't be able to do that. So there you go.
Can we address the incidents of cutting off the baby and the mother in the early primal period and how that plays out in society with violence and crime and
sensory deprivation,
drug abuse? Can you guys address that?
Well, I mean, I know that it's been well documented that, you know, children who have been given any kind of drugs during birth or separated, you know, I mean, there are many studies about how it makes children more at risk for needing to have drugs or and, you know,
it's also correlated with suicide by drugs. Babies that receive sedatives at birth, if they go on to commit suicide, they oftentimes use the same drugs.
Or they use the same knives.
Yeah, I'm interrupting, but what's a girl to do? You know, I mean, we know all this, and it's like, oh, I know it's better for my baby, and I need to do this, but I'm scared to death. I don't know what else to do. I can't have my baby on my own because it's so painful and so scary.
It doesn't have to be painful and scary.
I know it doesn't, but that's what everyone thinks. They see this model on TV.
Exactly. It's brainwashing. It's brainwashing.
And they're brainwashed to believe it. And, you know, I mean, if that's all I knew, I mean, that's what I did the first time. It's like, well, okay, just get this baby out of here because I certainly am no rare bird. You know, I mean, why would I be able to do it if nobody else can do it? You know, I don't want to be in all that pain, you know. So what people don't realize is that they just have to just scratch the surface a little bit and look for some support. It's out there. But if they just go and line up, like, you know, into that assembly line childbirth system, well, yeah, sheeple. If they line up, like, into that industrialized birth system, then they're just lining up to do that. And they don't have to. It's such a better experience. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I think if we were to focus on that, you know, I think that if we start having conscious conception where children are welcomed into families that where they are wanted and supported and taken care of through the birth process, a gentle, kind, safe, empowered birth, we are going to start creating healthy, harmonious, happy human beings that work together in cooperation. I really do think that we could shift humanity.
Which in one generation.
Yes, and we were, you know, for the listeners out there, we're talking about the creation of a new human race is what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, watch Birth as We Know It. She explains the whole thing
yes,
in like an hour and a half. and it makes so much sense. And I show people, and they're changed forever after they see it. It's the most amazing film ever.
The website is called birthasweknowit.com. It's a DVD you can buy.
And we're down to just a 2 to 3 minutes, and I want to know.
No!
I know, we can talk forever. I want to know if you could send me some links that I can put all this information that you talked about, especially as a Jewish mother, because I know there's a lot of people out there who have that same quandary, and they're dealing with the religious aspect and this medical aspect and the spiritual aspect. So we can put that on the website, and anything else that you want to share with our listeners and viewers, because we do have a website called thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, and you can email us at thoughtcrimeradio@gmail.com. And we, on our website, we'll have podcasts of this and all the other shows that we've been doing, but I like to give people all those resources, and you are a great resource to help women to really trust their bodies, which is really the key here, to trust your bodies and trust nature.
Trust birth.
Trust your own design.
Yep. And you know what? I think we do trust birth. We've just forgotten to do it. You know? I think we know how to do it. We just have forgotten for a while, but we just need to reopen up that window and trust again.
We have to be the most brainwashed society in the world, in history.
Well, we have the highest number of AIDS, with the highest number of circumcision, with the highest number of births that are born in the hospital, with doctors under drugs, interventions. I mean, it's no wonder.
Yeah, the U.S. has by far the highest HIV transmission rate in the world of the industrialized countries. And we also have the second highest circumcision rate. So that tells you right off the bat that circumcising in order to avoid HIV does not work.
And I'm really sorry. We're going to have to say goodbye, Lynn.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you so much for being on with us. And
I love y'all, and thank you for doing what you do.
Yes, you too. Bless you.
Yes. All right.
Take care.
So next week on September 28th, our guest is going to be Stephanie Dawn Preston. And she's on the other coast. She's on the West Coast from Santa Monica, California. And she's the founder of Sacred Birth Work. So we're going to start transitioning from the circumcision conversation into this creating and preparing for a really sacred, safe, meaningful birth that we really do believe can usher in a new humanity.
Divine guidance. That's what we're talking about, divine guidance.
And so up next is another local show, The Tech Guys. And it's an exciting show, big change of pace, but they're going to be coming up next. Thank you for joining us here on Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for...
The voiceless.
We are the voice for the voiceless, the children who cannot defend themselves, and we're for the human rights of babies and children.
And the human rights of nature, the natural rights of nature.